Welcome to Rice Pudding Poetry, celebrating its fifth year at Rice Public Library in Kittery, Maine. I'm your host, Kimberly Green, and I'm mindful that our show this month is coming in the midst of a worldwide pandemic and on the cusp of a national election. I've kept on my desk a copy of writer Michael Chabon's 2019 Medal Day address to McDowell Colony artists, because his words have continued to inspire me through this catastrophic past year. He says, and I quote, "To experience the truth of art, the truth in art, reminds us and reassures us in this kingdom of lies, of deep fakes and disinformation, that there is such a thing as truth. And what is the truth of art? That slaking drink in the desert of the world," he continues. "It's this: I am not I. You are not you. We are we." He continues, "Art bridges the lonely islands of our subjectivities. It's the string that hums from my tin can over here, looking out of my little window, to you over there, looking out of yours. All the world's power to hold us back and keep us down lies in its ability to persuade us that we are powerless to understand each other, to feel and see and love each other, and that therefore it is pointless to try. But art knows better. And as artists, we're just going to keep on doing what we do." End quote. Rice Pudding is one of the many ways we seek to share ourselves with one another. One of the ways, to borrow from Chabon, we keep that string humming from one little window to the next. If you're new to Rice Pudding, we're glad you've found us. There's always plenty of room in this circle. Your generous presence and rapt listening bestow a blessing on the poems and music we share. And to those of you who have been gathering for Rice Pudding over the past several years, we offer a special word of thanks. This celebration of our fifth anniversary belongs to you. We have with us two special guests from Portland, Maine, poet Samah Abdurraqib and composer-musician Ahmad Muhammad, also known as Kafari. More about both of them in a moment. Samah's theme for our show is body, a wonderfully evocative word that invites reflection on the physical body, the spiritual body, the solitary body, the one body of us all. Kafari is going to start things off for us. He's a pianist, percussionist, beatmaker, sound healer, film composer, and teaching artist. His most recent album, called Beholding, consists of 14 serene piano meditations. Here is one of them, called Slow Time. Thank you. I'm privileged now to introduce our guest poet, Samah Abdurraqib. Samah, she says, has always loved words, reading them, hearing them, writing them, and has published her work in a variety of places, including academic collections like Bad Girls and Transgressive Women in Popular Television, Fiction, and Film, on online platforms like The Body Is Not an Apology, and in poetry collections such as the Maine Coast Heritage Trust's Voices from the Coast. Her extraordinary poem, Oryx in Crates, which is the poem that actually introduced me to Samah, was made into a short film by Maine Poet Laureate Stuart Kestenbaum's Poems from Here. Her first published collection of poetry, Each Day is Like an Anchor, is just out. We're honored to have you with us, Samah.
I'm so honored to be kicking off this fifth year of the Rice Pudding series, this wonderful series that brings together Maine writers, Maine poets, and Maine folks who love poetry to read and share poems. So thank you. So the theme of my readings, I'm going to call it a loose theme, is quote unquote body. When I was looking at my poems and thinking about what poems I wanted to share, I realized that one feature of a lot of the poems that I'm writing is that they are very visceral. The first few poems that I'm going to read really focus on being embodied and the visceral experiences of being in a body. So the first poem I'm going to read is a poem entitled Upon Leaving the Meditation Retreat. And in most years that aren't riddled with pandemic, I spend about 5 days at a silent meditation retreat for people of color in outside of Boston. And it's a beautiful retreat. We spend most of the time sitting in meditation, walking in meditation, listening to Dharma talks. And the very first year I went to the meditation retreat, I was kind of sitting on the lawn while people were walking in meditation, and I was just kind of marveling at all of the black and brown bodies that were just kind of slowly pacing back and forth and imagining what that scene looked like to people who might be passing by. So anyway, this is a poem that I wrote shortly after leaving the meditation retreat. Upon leaving the meditation retreat. There are no crows here behind these hedges. No crows and no ravens. No blackbirds to speak of. Only mourning doves, sparrows, and flycatchers. What does it mean, no blackbirds behind these hedges? There are only black and brown bodies walking in slow motion in the afternoon sun. I have spent 5 days in silence, words weaving through my mind, complex macrame. 5 days in silence, and I have no new insight, only haikus that I folded into luck dragons and left on my windowsill. Their creases will collect dust. Dust will settle into the folds, like the dust that settled into my elbows, behind my knees, as my body became still. When I am done here, all of this will fade. The absence of blackbirds, the brown faces like mine, the slow steps towards enlightenment. All that will remain is the echoing question, how is it that you suffer? All that will remain is the response, may you awaken each day without exception and be free, he smiled. I was recently texting with a friend of mine. I have a little workout buddy, accountability buddy group. And, in normal conditions, we would be working out together at gyms, going to boot camps, lifting weights. But right now we are mostly texting each other in solidarity and working out together. And we are of the age where we are often working out and then the next day lamenting all of the pains that we have that our bodies have. And my friend, I was like texting a couple days ago about how, you know, she was texting about how her neck hurt, how she hurt her neck somehow doing one of our workouts. And I was like, you know, I was just coming here to talk about how bad my hip hurts. And my friend said, having a body is a liability. And I thought that was hilarious. Also kind of sort of true. it made me think about all the different ways that our bodies, they take so much weight, they carry us through so much, but also they fail us and they conspire against us without us even knowing. This next poem is called How to Poison Yourself. It's a poem that I wrote about my experience. I was diagnosed with a very, very rare cancer in 2015, and I went through 2 years of treatment. And it's a poem about the experience of treatment, going through cancer treatment. How to Poison Yourself. 1. Accept that you are dying. Then vow to beat death. 2. Go find the people who know about poisons. Call them by their last names. Read their lips. They will talk too fast. Take the brochure from the brightly lit room. 3. Prepare your body. Roll up your sleeves. Change into something loose, something soft. You will never be comfortable, but your comfort is key. 4. Take the poison in. Sit back, because it will take some time. Pretend not to notice. Watch gravity work. Feel your veins dilate. Know that it moves through you, killing indiscriminately. 5. Smile at the bystanders. Wait. There are many things in life that I find tedious. One of those things is the experience of washing the dishes. I just hate that I'm standing there at the sink for, you know, however long it takes. Honestly, it doesn't actually take that long. It really only takes me about 10 minutes or what have you. But, you know, just the anticipation of standing in front of the sink and everything gets wet and whatever I'm wearing gets drenched and I have to change my clothes. I just loathe the experience of washing the dishes. And it's one of those experiences that I wish that I could, like, have some sort of body double wash the dishes for me, or have some sort of, like, out-of-body experience where I can sit on the couch and then my whatever it is can wash the dishes for me. And so I wrote a poem about about washing dishes, and I'm including it in this theme of body because it's an interesting, like, it's a very tactile experience, and it's a very, I don't know, for me, oddly enough, it feels like a very physical experience. Like, I spend a lot of time when I'm washing the dishes thinking about holding my body up, putting my body into, you know, parts of my body into the water, what it feels like when I'm touching the dishes and all of these things. So it feels like a very embodied experience that I don't like. This poem is called Tethered to This Basin. The mundane can be a meditation, is what they say. Noticing is slowing down, is existing in the moment. I plunge my hands in, searching for the bottom of the soon-to-be murky pool. It is too hot. Reason one why I hate this task. Reveals the delicate and transitory nature of temperature. Mind drifts away from this feeling to other feelings as hands grasp warm metal clanking against one another. Make a fist, grab them all. Focus on dull edges, sharp spokes. Mind the points. I am up to my wrist now, left hand. I know the greases are separating, floating, attaching themselves to my flesh. I loathe this never-ending process. Mind drifts and I think of all those plunging hands and all those murky deeps, farmers pulling breached calves, the dark water noodlers. At that moment, my fist emerges, a cascade of water over flesh and metal. Right hand comes to join my left, signaling the start of a new part of this ritual. And it's like that, for longer than I'd like it to be. My hips grow slack, my knees buckle forward, touching wood. Left hand on porcelain now, on plastic, on glass. Right hand comes to meet the left, now in repetition. Not in prayer pose, but in a circular motion, like making a mandala. Intent on being the catalyst, the holder of the gate, the one who transforms states. Except this is not transcendent work. This is me tethered to a basin of now tepid water with the freshly cleaned, haphazardly arranged on my right, with how many more lurking below these murky depths on my left, and with the knowledge that I will be forced to return in a day's time, and with the understanding that this task is never ending. Another reason I like the theme of the body is because I think there's so many different sorts of metaphors that can kind of emanate from that theme. I think about all of the ways that we talk about the body being a home, for example. The next poem I want to read is sort of in that vein. It is actually in that vein. So this is a poem that I wrote in response to someone else's poem. This is part of a collaborative project that I was doing with a group of writers, and we were writing responses to each other's poems. And the poem that I was responding to kind of did like an extended metaphor of this idea of the body as a home. And it's just called In Response to a Body Poem. I have never been the handy type. I feel like I should apologize for that. I build things that are drafty, ramshackle, riddled with holes and gaps that threaten and undulate with strong winds. I build spaces that are unfit, rickety places I would not ask you to stretch your skin over. But for you, I swear, I will learn. I will cultivate skills. I'll spend all winter watching HGTV and having tea with the old men who notched the beams back in their day. I'll take a 6-week virtual class on interior design. I'll let Luther sing to me about houses that aren't homes all winter long. Come spring, I'll lay out my blueprint and I'll begin. I'd ask so little of you. I'd gently push out your ribcage to make space for us, convert your lungs into a doorway. Your heart would be the hearth. It would hold the fire, would be the box from which the music emanates, would resonate with the rhythm that patterns our days. Come summer, we'll have grown the ivies to be trellised by your intestines. We'll have swept clean your pelvic floor, made the musculature smooth for whatever pallets we place there. In late August, I will pull up the garlic and hang it to dry on the curve of your stomach. Come fall, if your liver remains pliable, I will bend it into a curve to create a cavity and we'll stack the logs there behind it, close to the hearth. By winter, we will settle. If your body were a house, if this house were your body, we would make it a home in some kind of way. And I just want to thank Alana, who is the original, the poet who wrote the poem that I was responding to. And they wrote just a really beautiful poem. So thank you, Alana. I wrote this poem shortly after George Floyd was murdered. And this poem is about grief and where it sits in the body and what we do with that grief. This is a fire, and that is a crucible. These are two hands separated. None of us know where to put this grief, this laden grief. We could put it there, but that is a crucible, and this is a fire. So we hold it tight until nightfall, and there it is. Voices rung raw, we press together, push to our knee, speaking the names of our grief. We press our chests to the ground. Black bodies on concrete, on black tar, look like this. Black limbs and chests inhabited by the spirits of those taken from us. 8 minutes there, pressed on the warmed ground, grief trapped between throat, heart, gut, and concrete. The sweat from our black bodies leaves marks on the ground. Between two hands, one of fire and one of crucible, grief sits in our bodies below the sternum. We try to still our hands to hold it, to run here and there with it, but our hands are full with fire and with crucible. Think Hajar in the desert, back and forth, Safa and Marwa. But that was despair, and this is grief. We are still waiting for our wellspring. Thank you. So those of you who know me know this, but those of you who don't, you're about to learn something. I am a bird nerd. I do enjoy our feathered friends. I get really excited about going birding, and if any of you have the joy of being around me when I am birding, it's like I turn into a different kind of creature. This is a poem I wrote after in the middle of spring migration, and I was with a friend who was like, oh, I want to get into birding, and I was like, I will go with you, but just be forewarned, I get really excited. Anyway, so we were just like taking a walk, and we had our binoculars, and we heard a woodpecker. And so this poem is a poem about looking for a woodpecker in the woods. It's called What Good Is a Hammer? We got so still in the woods together that afternoon, crossing the soggy plank that divided the murky, marshy water. I just delighted you with my quick scan spotting of that snake that slithered up from the water and into the moss. You already thought I was magic. Let me show you more. You sentimental collector and cataloger of moments, I am learning. This is what you hold your breath for. Let me show you more. I hear it first because I am always ready. I rush to you, my sharp whispered listen, pushing you into silence and stillness. There it is, back in the trees, deep to the right, there. What is a woodpecker but a rapid staccato drumbeat, begging your heart to keep pace, I think, as we stand. My hands on your chest, on your heartbeat, my ear on your back, on your heartbeat. Now you hear it too, and everything about you becomes still and alert, the way I like it. We are together on this plank, the possibility of a new moment somewhere off there, if we are lucky. Yes, we will be lucky. We have been thus far in our own pasts, and here, in this present. So we set off, heads cocked, together, but not. It should be right there, but it's not. I am teaching you about their wiliness, about how they throw their voices and their sounds, how they rise above the congruent melodies and then drop just below as you approach. But what good is a hammer if it isn't precise? So we pause at a bend and then turn left because we will be lucky. Coming to a certain tangle of half-dead leaning trees, we stop. It's right above us now, but also behind us and through us, filling up our bodies. You see her first. She is right in front of us. I will hold the awe, joy, surprise of your voice in my mind until I can't anymore. You have seen something for the first time. I know that feeling. It takes me a moment, but then, now, I am with you. She is perfect, working so hard on this dead tree, stripped of bark, thin, smooth, tan. She is symmetry in black and white, white dots on her collapsed wings so close together, they're like bars streaked across wings, folded across a patch of white I know is there on her back. Beak short, head striped. I know that you are wondering, how can it be? How can a thing so small compel us forward from 60 yards away? But what good is a drumbeat if it doesn't compel? She flies off, breaking the spell, and you look at me for a beat, and I look away as we both chuckle awkwardly. What else is there to say now? As we tumble out of the woods into the small parking lot, you proudly tell a passerby we've just gone birding. I smile. You haven't seen a thing yet. Let me show you. So, you know, I quickly mentioned that I was diagnosed with this rare cancer in 2015. It was a very bizarre cancer. It was a sarcoma. And my favorite thing to explain about this cancer is that it was a sarcoma that normally white young men ages 13 to, I think, 18 get this sarcoma. I am none of those things. I was none of those things in 2015. I am none of those things now. So, you know, it's just our bodies and things like cancer, they have their own logic. They can surprise us. So this is the last poem I'm reading, and it's called The Body, The Apocalypse. When your body tries to end you, that's one kind of apocalypse. Down to the cellular level, dividing and dividing, plus multiplying and multiplying. Before you know it, before you sense it. An apocalypse of the body can be a surprise thing. It can overtake you. But sometimes you are defiant and you welcome in the poison. You accept the tools and the instruments. You become mutant. You become bionic. You meet the apocalypse with the process of becoming. Shift and change greets the apocalypse, and there is an explosion, internal and imperceptible. It explodes and explodes and breaks down the apocalypse, a scattering, making space for resurrection from the rubble. Sometimes. Sometimes. Our bodies are here with us and beyond our reach, teaching us that evolution is minute and violent, but it might save us before the end. So say we all.
Thank you.
That was Kafari's deeply moving Freedom is a Constant Struggle. And we heard his Stay Sweet within the body of Samaz Reading. It's been a real pleasure, Kafari, to be so gently lifted and carried by your creative vision. Sama, thank you for your brave and intimate poems and for sharing a bit about how each poem came into being. You have graced us with your presence, your wisdom, and your voice. Thank you. It's important to support our artists, so I'll take just a moment here to let you know that Sama's Each Day is Like an Anchor will be available online at a clearing, Maine. Go to www.aclearing.org. Kafari's music, including his newest album, Beholding, is available at kafarimusic.bandcamp.com. Rice Pudding continues now with our four community readers, each of whom has selected a poem that speaks in various ways to Samaz's theme of the body. Listen.
Hello, my name is Bill Burtis. I'm reading to you from the shore of Marinacook Lake in Reedfield, Maine. I've chosen the poem Ode to Broken Things by Chilean poet and Nobel laureate Pablo Neruda, whose complicated, perhaps even broken, personal history may well be reflected in this poem. I selected To Broken Things for the ways I hear it connect to the theme of the body, because of the many ways in which bodies are being broken now, including the bodies of laws, of politics, belief systems, and of many people. But I was struck also by the poem's insistence on there being no blame to be laid, even if one may be hinted at, no responsibility assigned or claimed, no finger pointed, and how strongly this contrasts with the current mood in our culture. Finally, I think the poem alludes to a deeper spiritual body represented by the ocean, which can heal broken things and which always persists. Ode to Broken Things by Pablo Neruda. Things get broken at home, like they were pushed by an invisible, deliberate smasher. It's not my hands or yours. It wasn't the girls with their hard fingernails, or the motion of the planet. It wasn't anything or anybody. It wasn't the wind. It wasn't the orange-colored noontime or night over the earth. It wasn't even the nose or the elbow or the hips getting bigger or the ankle or the air. The plate broke. The lamp fell. All the flower pots tumbled over one by one. That pot which overflowed with scarlet in the middle of October, it got tired from all the violets. And another empty one rolled round and round and round all through winter until it was only the powder of a flower pot, a broken memory, shining dust. And that clock, whose sound was the voice of our lives, the secret thread of our weeks, which released one by one so many hours for honey and silence, for so many births and jobs, that clock also fell, and its delicate blue guts vibrated among the broken glass, its wide heart unsprung. Life goes on grinding up glass, wearing out clothes, making fragments, breaking down forms, and what lasts through time is like an island on a ship in the sea, perishable, surrounded by dangerous fragility, by merciless waters and threats. Let's put all our treasures together, the clocks, plates, cups cracked by the cold, into a sack and carry them to the sea and let our possessions sink into one alarming breaker that sounds like a river. May whatever breaks be reconstructed by the sea with the long labor of its tides. So many useless things which nobody broke, but which got broken anyway.
Hello, I'm Mary Jane Rowan, a retired teacher of reading and writing at the middle school level. I also taught for many years at the UNH Writers Academy. My best lessons of reading and writing, I believe, have sprung out of poetry. After all, poets are the best of the best of writers. When Kimberly asked me to be a reader, I was delighted. Looking through the poems she sent, I was surprised to find a poem by Marsden Hartley. Marsden Hartley? He was a poet, too. I'd only known him as the painter of and from Maine. Well, his body of work in both painting and poetry has been exciting to explore. He was much more than what I had thought of him. It was Gertrude Stein who wisely encouraged him to become the essayist and poet he became. In the poem, Back Road Country, you can hear in words a painting of the Maine he so loved. Back Road Country by Marsden Hartley. In this house there are swallows resting upstairs. In the farthest rafters they have, with rich cups of clay, mouthful by mouthful, made them strong for their destiny. You see the print of their swallow lips laid row on row. There are rakes and plows and sleds sitting silently, cluttering old sheds, where backbone meets breastbone of each conglomerate skeleton. The plow will never meet the furrow. The sled will never see the snow, where futility now beams through. Festoons of tethered moth and gray illiterate fly bespeak in accents moribund the crude festivity. The weather here will never find its east or west, or north or south, for everything is sunken to its knee in homely travesty. Wild mint comes wafting o'er break and flag where senile lintels sag. Pony cart in devastated blue, a phaeton in calico dismay awaits some touch of useless charity. Yet somehow, furtively, these effigies in clutches of decay bespeak coolly touch of recognition to soften their perdition. The paper on the wall is ignominious brown, yet when the sun goes affluently down over river, mead, and then the mountain, these walls light up pathetically, as of a long, stilled voice just spoke, and everywhere are touches to evoke a day, an evening, and a night, when the common things were far less erudite. I hear the hermit, from out of the darkened wood, give accent to the evening, as if he thought there must be touch of song for everything gone wrong.
She was born in 1930, and to some was known as Anne Rich Parker Deweese, or Nana Banana, or California Annie, or as she was to us, just simply Nana. During her lifetime, Nana traveled the world from South Africa to South America and beyond. She was an avid birder and poet, and spent many hours carefully crafting her chatbooks, bound with a hitch stitch of yarn. The holiday gift to the family was always a copy of her newest publication of poetry, 11 in all. In 1998, Nana presented a collection of works titled Her Blue Body, and on page 7, Following several pieces telling of her adventures down the Amazon, came this piece, Le Petit Déjeuner à Lehi Clinic. Compressed into an uncomfortable V on a thick plastic mattress, tongue glued to palate, teeth stuck to inside of mouth, linked by pale plastic umbilical cord inserted into the wrong wrist, I being left-handed, secured with tape to an IV draped over a garment rack, dispensing glucose and morphine, and also tethered by a thin green catheter emerging from the privates to a large plastic bag hooked to the side of the bed. Breakfast is served, a young aide appeared, locked my tray table into place and disappeared wraith-like. Trapped at chin level, I regarded a landscape of hard, dry, scrambled eggs and cold, wet toast. I've had the misfortune over the past several years to come face to face with that landscape of eggs and toast, and I hope never to see it again. I'm Bill Humphreys, here in Elliott, Maine. Nana was mother to my wife Betsy and sister Susan, grandmother of three, great-grandmother of two. It's been just past a year since we lost Nana and retired her blue body to peaceful rest alongside her parents in Newton, Massachusetts.
My name is Susie Burke, and I am very happy to be part of this rice pudding podcast. The poem I'm going to read spoke to me in part because of the times in which we are living, a time when we are limited in outward engagement, and so we have the opportunity and also at times the necessity to find ways to look within. I also found connection with a slim little volume I am reading called How to Walk by Thich Nhat Hanh. 15th century Indian mystic poet Kabir grew up in a Muslim family and was also influenced by Hinduism. While deeply spiritual himself, he was also critical of adherence to rituals or tenets that diminish other people and other faiths. He felt that the greater spirit lies within each and every one of us, in our own bodies, and so we need to be careful where we look. This is his poem, I Said to the Wanting Creature. I said to the wanting creature inside me, what is this river you want to cross? There are no travelers on the river road, and no road. Do you see anyone moving about on that bank, or nesting? There is no river at all, and no boat, and no boatman. There is no tow rope either, and no one to pull it. There is no ground, no sky, no time, no bank. No ford. And there is no body and no mind. Do you believe there is some place that will make the soul less thirsty? In that great absence, you will find nothing. Be strong then and enter into your own body. There you have a solid place for your feet. Think about it carefully. Don't go off somewhere else. Kabir says this, just throw away all thoughts of imaginary things and stand firm in that which you are.
Thank you, Bill Burtis, Mary Jane Rowan, Bill Humphreys, and Susie Burke for the care-filled ways each of you spoke about the poems you brought us and for your lovely readings of them. We're grateful, too, for Kafari's beautiful beholding, threads of which were braided through this portion of the show. The Rice Pudding Podcast will return in January. Many thanks to Library Director Lee Perkins and Tech Services Supervisor Greta Evans for their support and encouragement of this program. With thanks, too, to production engineer Douglas Green and to artist Sophie Green for the show's icon art. Matthew Clodier gave us the home recording guidelines. Our theme music is Pussyhat, composed by Kent Allen and Joyce Anderson. Stay well, everyone. Keep vivid in your minds the great gift and blessing of human touch, which comes, for now, in the form of all our voices. And if you haven't already voted, I'll see you at the polls. Bye for now.